Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Spesh.
Hello.
Great time of year, Derek.
Isn't it?
Yes, it is. Nice and cool.
It's cool.
Yeah.
Well,
in
yeah.
The evenings.
The evenings are cool. Yeah. The days are hot.
Yeah.
And it's everything. Our weather is a little bit erratic. And
yes, raining on the weekends.
I know.
It's nice during the weekday.
It was like this, what, 2-3 years ago, where it was like every weekend it rained. It's like, why?
Yeah, I'm going to go out this weekend and do a bunch of lawn stuff, and I wake up in the morning and it's pouring rain.
Exactly.
I guess I'm not doing that now. Good times, good times. I got in a fight with Squirrel.
Yes, I saw that.
Did you see
this
that?
Morning, I saw that.
Yeah, it got stuck in a fence, so I decided I would try to free the squirrel.
Reggie.
It's Reggie, our squirrel. We have two squirrels that frequent our bird feeder, Phil and Reggie. Reggie is actually, should be a Regina, because I didn't know she was a she until much later, but we still call her Reggie, and got stuck in one of those
snow fence
thingies. The Bell Canada there is using.
Yeah, you're getting doing, services.
Yeah, they're digging a massive hole in my yard is what they've done. And so when we came out for our 6 a.m. walk, Squirrel saw Athena and tried to make a run for the tree but got stuck because of his big fat ass.
So was it stuck around the neck or the waist?
The butt. Yeah, back legs. Couldn't get
so
the back legs.
So they got mostly through except for the butt.
Yep. And then, so I figured, okay, well, you know, I'm just going to get Athena to sit nicely, which she was. And I put my hoodie over top of Reggie so I could grab a hold of Reggie and see if I can wiggle her through. And I guess Athena looked and said, you got the squirrel!
If you're going to play with her, I want to play with her too.
And Reggie freaked out, got her head around the
outside the hoodie.
And, I got a nice big chunk missing from my finger for my problems. So I'm swearing at the squirrel. I'm swearing at the dog. 6 a.m. in the morning, trying to haul this 70-pound dog back up the driveway.
The neighbors are going, what's going on out there? You're screaming, Athena!
If somebody's got a video of this, they're going to make a fortune. That's all I'm saying. But yeah, like there's this trail of blood going up my driveway, up my steps, across my porch, in my house, all the way to the kitchen. Tracy comes down, we get it all patched up and put a big Band-Aid on it. I go back out.
In the meantime, Reggie's still stuck in the fence.
Reggie's still stuck out there. And by the time I got back, I had a big pair of leather gloves on and some clippers or snippers to cut the fence. And she's just laying there like she's resigned to her fate.
I'm done.
Someone's going to kill me and eat me. And I just, because I'm pissed off with Belle, I cut an extra big hole in the fence. Like, you can get a rabbit or a small dog through that hole now. But, all I got for my troubles was a chunk missing from my finger.
Thanks for saving me.
Until I get an apology, I am not feeding Reggie any more peanuts. I demand an apology. How did your Tuesday morning start?
Is there any missing flesh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They got sharp teeth. Apparently, that's how they can break nuts and stuff.
So now you have to worry about the fact that maybe she has a taste for human flesh now.
Right? No. What I'm hoping for is because we live close to the nuclear power plant, that maybe she's slightly radiated. And if Spider-Man is to be believed, I should slowly turn into Squirrel Man. And the jokes will go downhill from here.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious. I meant to ask. I haven't gone back to the post because you posted about this morning on Facebook.
Yeah.
But somebody posted a Squirrel Man song. Did he get AI to write that for him, or was that already out there?
I don't know. I think it was already out there, but I haven't looked. Yeah, my buddy Jeff, I think, said that to me. This one's for you.
It was a good song.
Squirrel Man. Yeah. So, you know, and then, of course, everybody's, oh, did you get a tetanus shot? Did you get a rabies shot? And what if, oh, you know what? I've been eating dirt since I was 2. I'm good. A good dose of the rabies might help me out.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm not worried about it as long as it doesn't get infected. And we've washed it multiple times. And
it bled out so much, nothing's in there.
Yeah, nothing's in there anymore. Even Tracy said that.
It squirted everything out.
So much blood kept flowing.
Yeah.
Any germs, anything.
Flushed. The wound flushed itself.
Yeah, right? So, but yeah, put the Band-Aid, the alcohol stuff on it. But yeah, there's a good chunk missing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all the thanks I get.
That reminds me. I read something about possums on the weekend. Did you know that they have a lifespan of only about 3 or 4 years?
Really?
Yeah. And they're very good for your local environment because they eat so many bugs. They're
I know they're big tick eaters.
They eat lots of ticks and bugs. They eat dead animals. And so if you ever come across a possum, they all initially hiss, then play dead.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently their body temperature is so low that they can't get rabies. Their body temperature is too low. Yeah, so they don't catch rabies, but they're also pretty much immune to any snake bite or any toxins or whatever.
Possums that can take rattlesnake bites, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
Imagine maybe if they get bit 3 or 4 times, it might start to affect them.
Yeah.
But I hear that if they get a really good wallop by a poisonous snake, or a venomous snake, that they just get sleepy for a while. They go crawl into a hole and sleep it off.
Sleep it off like a good drunk.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
But yeah, they can't get
rabies. But I got to think that if a snake hits you, they're probably getting pissed off and take it out on the snake first and then go for a nap.
They know that would be
like an angry drunk.
That would be a honey badger.
Honey badger. We need honey badgers in our neighborhood to take out the squirrels.
Yeah. So anybody, if you see possums out there, give them a wide berth, but mm-hmm. they're good for the environment.
We had one coming through our tree to go after the bird seed and stuff like that. And then it was visiting probably a good month or so. And then we saw it sleeping on the road.
Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a shame.
They're not fast movers.
No. We still have the stinky kitties in our neighborhood. We haven't seen the fox since the rats disappeared.
The stinky kitties.
Yeah, stinky kitties. The really stinky kitties. They got to be fast because they got that white rake stripe
right
up the middle.
Are they French?
Oh, I don't know. That's only in the cartoons. There is a local, speaking of cartoons, up in the Kawartha, there's one of the trails. There's apparently some aggressive coyotes.
Oh, yes.
And they list all these things to do.
Yeah.
And we just came up with a few of our own, like, if you see any boxes with Acme written on it, if you see a coyote on roller skates and a rocket on his back, stay away. Yeah. Don't dress up in a roadrunner outfit while on the trails.
Watch out for painted tunnels on big rocks.
Yeah, apparently there's an aggressive...
It's Kawartha's? Kawartha Highlands Kawartha, area?
Yeah, they say Kawartha Land Trust.
Okay.
So I think it's up that way. Mm-hmm. But, some people are saying there might be a den.
Oh, yeah.
So they're protecting. So once the pups are...
Yeah,
once the pups are up and
makes
about.
Makes sense.
And, yeah. But, yeah, lots of things going on right now.
Yeah, there's... everywhere we've been, everything I've seen, is like there's baby geese and baby birds and baby this, baby that. It's like it's spring.
We have a couple of Canada geese that every year lay eggs on the roof of our factory. On the roof.
Yeah.
Which wonders, like, what kind of parents are those? Because when the baby geese are big enough, what, do they just boot them off?
Like, adolescent geese, they have to be pretty old to be able to fly.
That's what I'm saying.
So, usually...
Follow me, kids!
So, on the St. Lawrence Seaway, there was they had an issue, overpopulation issue, by one of the hydroelectric dams. And so, along that stretch of... near Cornwall, Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
What they would do every year is they would herd up all the baby geese, the adolescent geese, that are no longer with their parents. They can't fly, so they set up snow fencing and rallied them all together and put them in transport trucks and take them somewhere else because
they shipped them to the United States. We export cobra chickens to the United States.
Yeah. But no, they take them out to a more receptive to that many geese. Because it's just like there's population.
Antarctica.
Quebec.
we ship all our Canada geese to Quebec in the United States. Hey, Florida. Yeah, we'll trade you some flamingos for some cobra chickens.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got this. But isn't that the, what is that treaty thing between Mexico, Canada, and the United States?
Is it for the butterflies?
No.
Oh, the NAFTA thing.
NAFTA, that's it.
Yeah. But it's different now, isn't it? Didn't they call it, when they rewrote
Nifty?
It there? Yeah, they call it something else now.
I don't know. Can we, like, ship all our cobra chickens out to,
out to Mexico?
Out to Mexico.
We'll trade them. Give us your monarch butterflies, and we'll give you cobra chickens.
Yeah, and we'll give you, yeah, cobra chickens. That's a fair
yeah,
trade,
yeah.
Right? How many butterflies for one chicken?
I don't know. 1,000.
1,000 butterflies for a Canada goose. That sounds like a deal, if you ask me. But yeah, so that was my exciting day. I got in a fight with a squirrel, and it's been downhill. Yeah. What happened yesterday? Something happened yesterday, too, Monday. Because we record on Tuesdays, so,
yeah,
you know. But yeah, yesterday morning wasn't all that great either. So can't wait till tomorrow. It's going to be awesome.
Can
it's
only
just upgrading from yeah, here, yeah, right?
It only gets better.
What else is going on? Oh, you were talking about, is it the Cincinnati Zoo?
No, it was the Oakland Zoo.
Oh, Oakland Zoo. I knew it was a zoo.
So the Oakland Zoo, they do this thing every... Well, this is the third year they've done it. So what they do is there's in their... I don't know what you call it. The Black Bear Exhibit.
Yeah.
So it's like June 1st is National... It's National Black Bear Day. And so it's... Well, they do this everywhere, but it's definitely in the States, National Black Bear Day.
Why do they only get a day?
I don't know. Black Bear Month.
Yeah.
Anyways, at the Oakland Zoo on every June 1st, they set up in the Black Bear exhibit a bear camp. It's a bear camp event. And so it's in this open field. I watched the video today. It's in an open field, and so all the visitors are sort of up on a raised cliff, and you're looking down across the stream into a field. And so they set up a campsite, and so it's just this fake campsite
with like tents and picnic tables,
Picnic table and coolers, and in the coolers is just ice. And but yeah, so they release the bears into the bear camp, and the bears roll through and start picking coolers open and crawling inside of tents and ripping sleeping bags apart and swiping everything off of the picnic table and
training them,
I guess. Well, these bears aren't going to be in the wild, right?
I hope not, they
live in the zoo, so
not after this training, so but if there's a zombie apocalypse, you know, these bears are going to make
sure. But it's what they say, it's a good lesson for the public to but they know the videos are going to get out, they know that there's going to be enough public to see it. They do it once on June 1st, and but yeah, it's basically their form of educating the public about keeping a clean campsite and how not to, you know, make sure you have food put away, hung in a tree, whatever is the preferred method. And so, yeah, so these couple bears just came through, and the tent was ripped up, and they were playing with the tent, and they were slowly stripping.
Did they put mannequins in there at least?
No, there were no mannequins.
What a missed opportunity.
Yeah.
Right? I remember when we were in grade school up in North Bay.
Yeah.
They would show with the big trucks, the big snow blower trucks.
Yeah.
What would happen if you were in one of the big...
Would they put a mannequin in the snow?
They put a straw, like, scarecrow with fake blood.
Oh, wow.
And these big blades would be...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And shooting...
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, this thing's massive on the front of a big, like, dump truck
exactly.
sort of thing, right? And so all the blades are going, and
some
then...
Some kid's body's dying.
Then all of a sudden, it hits this scarecrow, and brrr, shoots clothing and straw and fake blood for, like, 30 feet. And you're thinking, this is why you don't build a snow fort beside the road, kids.
Yeah. It's like, yikes.
Well, okie dokie.
Holy
so,
cow.
Yeah, so they missed an opportunity.
Yeah.
This is what's going to happen.
They could have put some mannequins in there.
And middle of the night when they come out and they start hunting.
But
for
I can
the
see why they wouldn't want to teach the zoo bears about eating humans.
Why?
because there's caretakers at the zoo.
Well, just don't make them smell like human. Make them smell like fish or something. This guy doesn't smell normal. He doesn't smell like a fish mannequin. Yeah.
He doesn't taste like that food they give me once a year.
Yeah. Yeah. He's foreign food. Let's try him out. Yeah, I guess that could be a bit of a drawback to the caretakers.
Oh, no, we just taught them to eat the caretakers.
That's the 15th one we've gone, so we got these bears. Wow. Yeah, that, you know what, that's a good, like you say, a good educational thing so people can see.
Yeah.
And yeah, like you found them, so if the videos are getting out, mm-hmm. you're going to see what exactly is going to happen.
Yeah.
There was a guy, I just whizzed past it. In Yellowstone?
Oh, I saw that too.
Yeah, he got attacked by a bear.
He walked up on, he said he heard a noise, he just lifted his eyes and his head up, and he saw a baby bear trotting up a hill. And then before, he said he heard the bear before he saw the bear, and he's fumbled for his bear spray, but he didn't have time to get the bear spray out. He got the bear spray out in his hand, but then the bear was on him, knocked the bear spray out of his hand, and then he managed to recover the bear spray, but he said he knew what he had to do. And so he lay on the ground and then covered the back of his neck mm-hmm. with his hands to protect his vital organs and his neck, and the bear was biting his legs, buttocks, hands, and then he screamed, and so the bear was initially going to run away, but then he screamed, and it just kind of re-energized the bear, and then he had the bear spray in his hand, and the bear bit his hand and the can of bear spray. The bear got a mouthful of bear spray because the can burst.
Right.
And then the bear ran off.
Well, I guess the rangers said he did everything proper.
Yes, he did everything. He did nothing wrong. He had equipment. He had phone. He had bear spray, and so he. It's not like he was being an idiot in the woods. He wasn't. Yeah. And so I saw it on Torrens of Yellowstone, but it wasn't in Yellowstone. It was in Montana. But he said he posted it on Torrens and Yellowstone.
Oh, maybe that's why I thought
as a lesson for people. It's like this is. But,
do you remember our conversation when I came across that bear last year?
Yeah.
And you said, did you get a picture? And I said, there was no time.
Yeah, it was quick.
If that bear had continued coming,
I
would have been turtled because I had the pack on. Yeah. I had almost had one arm out and I had my hand on my knife.
Yeah.
And that was as far as I would have gotten. And that bear would have been on me.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy.
It's amazing how fast those fatties are.
I know. They are very fast.
Yeah.
What did they say? 50. So it was on an American site that I saw it, and then I had to Google it myself, but because somebody said 70 miles an hour, and people are going, I don't think it's 70. So I Googled it, and somebody else had Googled it, and they said, here's what Google says, as much as you want. So it was like between 45 and 50 miles an hour is their top speed, and but yeah, so that's pretty fast.
That's pretty fast. You don't have much. Yeah.
And that's a sprint.
You've got the first shock thing too of seeing the bear coming at you.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden your brain kicks in what to do, and you don't have much. Because usually when you're coming across them, surprising them, then it's not like they're a mile away.
Yeah, it's
you surprise. You take your time getting your pack surprised. Off or whatever. Yeah. And, all right, I'm ready for you now. You don't have time. I mean, you've surprised them, and they're just going to fight and flight.
Yeah.
Hopefully flight.
It was a good lesson. He said this is, and everybody was saying that's what you do. And that's what the ranger said. He did everything right. You protect your vitals. You play dead. You do whatever.
I was told go into the fetal position and cover the back of your neck.
Yes.
Yeah. Right? Because that's what they'll try to grab your neck and.
Yes. Because they know they can kill their prey by snap of the neck type thing. So, yeesh.
Oh.
And he had some deep holes on his body, like his hand was.
I see that one on his back.
Deep. That was a deep cut. You could see the teeth holes, and then there's a big slash. And his legs, it didn't show his legs except for the fact he was all bandaged up. And so it was like top ankles to hip, he was bandaged up. So, that bear went over him pretty good.
Yep. So, bears are not to be trifled with in the backcountry.
Yeah.
You know, But, I think maybe send me that video for the bear campsite thing.
Sure, sure.
And we'll post it on our social media there so people can take a peek.
So the video I saw was, you go, it's on MSN.com or whatever, and it does link to the actual video from the zoo. I went to the zoo, Oakland Zoo website. I couldn't find the video there.
Hmm.
But I didn't look that hard. I was at work. So
you're actually got to work.
I didn't have a lot of time, so I...
I'm sorry, but what kind of slacker are you?
I know, right?
You're slacking from slacking. But yeah, send that to me later and we'll throw it up there. So let's talk about some canoeing and water stuff, shall we?
Yes. Well, you know, camping related, the bears, yeah. Deer storing the camp, the bears eating the camper or the hiker.
Do you remember beginning of the year we were talking about Stahlquist?
Yes.
Yeah, we mentioned closing up shop, and they were originally part of the Aqualungs group of brands, and along with things like Apex and Ulmer, Aquasphere, and US Divers.
Yeah.
Aqualungs group was bought out by Barings Investment last year.
It's one of these things that, like, I don't want to distract from the story here, but we're seeing this a lot, and it's just one of those things that's like, you know, this camping store was here for 50 years and we don't have anybody to take it over. So we're closing it instead of selling it. But then there's a lot of like magazines that are closing down. There's a lot of sports brands that are closing down or being bought out by bigger. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's that constant thing. It's really hard to compete.
Big companies are trying to gather up all the small brands.
Yeah.
Right. And then whichever ones they didn't really want, mm-hmm. they're just getting rid of.
Yeah.
Well, this was one of them. Barings offered to, they offloaded US Divers, the snorkeling brand, shortly after this deal.
Yeah.
Saying it wanted to focus on scuba diving equipment, including the supply of kit to military and professional divers. It seems Stahlquist was outdoor firm specializing in personal flotation devices and paddle sports apparel. I know why before I bought my Kokatat dry suit, I was looking at a Stahlquist.
Okay, yeah.
Like half the price.
But, yeah.
And apparently it was up for sale if anybody wanted to. So Sports Dimension Inc., a leading provider of water sports recreational equipment, has announced the acquisition of Stahlquist water sports brand from the Aqualung Group. So it is back alive. He says, we are thrilled to welcome the Stahlquist brand to the Sport Dimension family, says Sport Dimension President Kurt Rios. Stahlquist's reputation for excellence and dedication to creating top-of-the-line water sports gear perfectly complements our existing product offerings. This acquisition underscores our commitment to providing customers with the best equipment for their outdoor pursuits. We see tremendous potential in the Stahlquist brand. Our team is eager to collaborate with Stahlquist's talented designers and engineers to continue innovating and delivering cutting-edge solutions that meet the evolving needs of water sports enthusiasts. This acquisition expands Sports Dimension's portfolio, now encompassing over 30 distinctive brands, solidifies a position as a top provider of high-quality outdoor gear. Sports Dimension, they own things like Body Glove, Jimmy Sticks, Fluid, and BZ Pro Board.
Yeah, and so you can see where the initial Barings investment, so this is an investment firm. They're going to invest and buy brands that fit their brand. And Stahlquist, the PFDs just didn't fit their brand.
Mm-hmm.
So they just spun it off to somebody else.
Yep. And somebody else now all of a sudden has all this stuff that's already in production and they just got to step in and
keep it going. And that's good. So they're buying a known brand.
Yep.
And they can just continue on with that brand. It's nice when you see somebody buys up a brand for whatever reason. And sometimes you see them like we just spent whatever, $100 million on this product. We need to make our money back, so cut some corners. That's what you hope they don't do. It's right. nice to see when they don't cut corners and say, well, this is a long-term investment. We will eventually make our money back. Maybe not this year. Maybe not 10 years from now. But
they'll get it back.
Yeah.
So, and they've got all those, like they said, the engineers and designers, so they can improve on yeah. even stuff they've got.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, exactly.
Cool. Glad to see that they're not dead in the water. We've been talking last year. We've been working on Athena's recall and stuff for when we're on portages. I go up to the leash-free area where there's trails of other dogs and people and all that sort of stuff. And we're at the point now where I can call her.
Mm-hmm.
Like if she's boogieing up in front of me like 30 feet or whatever. If we can't see her, we just call her, give a whistle, and okay. she comes ripping back. And it's to the point now where I call her, I can have her sit in front of me, lay down in front of me, and people and other dogs can walk by.
Nice.
And she doesn't move.
That's perfect.
It was just perfect. But
we're she still goes after squirrels.
She still goes after squirrels. Gear Junkie had an article called The Best Dog Leashes for 2024. Some of them didn't pertain, but some of them are good for portage trips and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
They say from epic hikes to strolls around town and everywhere in between, a solid dog leash will see you through it all. With the help of our furry friends, we pulled, chewed, tangled, ran, walked, and even misbehaved sometimes bring you the best leashes out there. If you have a pup, you'll need a dog leash. The best leashes keep dogs safe and out of trouble and allow owners to maintain control in the event of an emergency. Our tester, Christy Parr, rigorously tested different dog leashes in various environments and weather conditions. She and her four dogs used these leashes on walks and hikes in sunny and rainy weather through different terrains such as woods and farms, fields. And here's just I think there was like eight or something like that. And I just picked a couple that would do well for people that are trying to train their dogs for portages and stuff like that, or, you know, paddling. They do say the best overall dog leash is the Rough Wear Roamer Bungee Dog Leash. And this is sort of like one of the ones we were looking at. It's $40, nylon aluminum clasp, best for everyday use, hiking and running. Running. Yeah, right. Unique features, bungee and hands-free. Like, these are one of those ones that you wrap around your waist.
Oh, okay. So I was going to say, how is it hands-free?
Yeah. That's cool when you're portaging, yeah. but if your dog still doesn't have the recall and stuff like that,
yeah.
like, if it's hands-free, so it's just tied around your waist sort of thing, if your dog's still going to be bopping all over that trail.
She gets tangled up.
Well, yeah. and they still get access to the people walking by.
Exactly.
And that's yeah. the whole point,
and
right?
tripping people
yeah.
with the rope, with leash. And
yeah. The pros are hand-free capabilities, bungee webbing, and padded handle. Cons, price, and might be too heavy for smaller breeds. Now, $40 isn't that bad for something like this.
I think that's good,
you know, smaller breeds, you shouldn't have a dog anyway. I'm a fan of big dogs. So,
small dog is just food.
Small dogs, that's just a cat that barks. Come on. The Rough Wear Roamer Bungee Dog Leash stands out as our top pick for several reasons. It offers hands-free capabilities thanks to its bungee webbing and padded handle. This leash is versatile in terms of length and color options and converts, allowing for secure hands-free control of your pooch. Made from durable nylon webbing and Rough Wear's proprietary wavelength stretch webbing with a heavy-duty plastic buckle and aluminum clasp, this leash proved itself against our tester's strongest pullers. The padded handle provides a comfortable grip for owners, and the waist belt can extend to 48 inches when in hands-free mode. Leash is available in three colors and two lengths. 5.5 feet, that stretches to 7, and 7.3 feet, that stretches to 11. That'd be a good one, because that way your dog is out from under your canoe, if that's what you're doing.
And you don't have that hoik of, if you're wearing it leash-free and whatever. Like, if I have a canoe on my head, a backpack on my back, and I'm going over rocky ground, the dog goes and and jerks on the leash, it's not a solid contact and pulls you sideways. It's like you can brace for it because you can feel it stretching.
Well, at 11 feet, if you're walking up a portage and, you know, there's, you come across the ones where you've got to walk up rocks or
there's
something like
room
that,
to,
your dog can already be up there.
Up there, not in the way
with
of the
11
canoe.
Feet.
Yeah.
As opposed to 7 feet, you and your dog are going up the same time, and your dog lunges as it runs up these.
It hops and pulls,
Yeah, so that could be a bit of a detriment. Over the course of about 2 months, the leash was tested with adolescent mixed breed and two rambunctious German Shepherd mixes. It was up to the unique challenges presented at all three dogs, pulling, a little chewing, and a lot of frolicking, and looks as good today as it did day one. The talon swivel clasp allows for more movement with less tangling, and the leash can be secured around a post or tree using the waist clip without removing the leash from your dog, which is a big thing for a lot of dogs. Roughwear Roamer Bungee Dog Leash is great for wilderness use, and is its integrated traffic handle also makes it ideal for city use when you need to keep your dog close at hand and out of danger. So yeah, so it's, you can let it go long, or there's another hand, you can wrap it up so the handle's
shorten
closer.
Cinch it in.
Shorten it up and have it that way. This is something we've been looking at, is the hands-free ones for our trips. That's sort of what we've been looking to go for this year. So the second one was the best hands-free dog leash, the Fido Pro Remy Runner Leash. Price $49. Nylon material, best for hiking, running, and backcountry adventures. Again, the running thing. Unique features, hands-free dual handles and extenders, 54-inch adjustable to 46-inch and 30-inch. Pros, rugged construction, hands-free option, bungee, and dual handles. Cons, expensive, not suitable for small dogs. Again, $49. Realistically, if you're looking for something like this,
If it's ideal, if it's what you're looking for, it's worth the money, right?
Yeah. You know what? $50 to me isn't expensive for something like this.
It seems a little short for portaging. So it's, the longest length is 54 inches, but what's that, 5 feet or something?
Yeah.
And so just over 5 feet. So it'll adjust down to 46 or 30.
Just under 5 feet.
Yeah.
Right? Because 48 inches is 4.
Yeah. Yes, right? You're right. Yep. So it's not very long. That doesn't give. So I don't know that I would use that one because, like on a portage.
Maybe for hiking.
But if you've got a canoe on your shoulders.
Yeah. Again, with the jerking and the jumping and the hopping and and stuff like that, might cause some issues. If you're looking for the perfect way to keep your dog contained on your backcountry adventures, the Fido Pro Remy Runner Leash is definitely the leash for you. This leash has so many valuable features, it's hard to list them all. Hands-free option is great for any activity that requires you to use your hands. Cross-country skiing, hiking with poles, and running, to name a few. So, yeah, that's perfect with the leash-free part, right? The waistband is adjustable up to 46 inches, so it's versatile enough to be used by multiple dog parents. So you don't need to buy one for every person.
Yeah.
It's adjustable. Our tester loved walking her country property using the waistband, leaving her hands free to snap photos of critters. She also loved that the bungee provided a little extra give. As a result, she didn't feel like her spine would snap if her dog flushed a bunny from the underbrush. Okie dokie. Only gripe is the leash handle is very stiff and uncomfortable to hold. Logo placement attaches in a place that allows it to dig into your palm or wrist, depending on how you hold the leash. Leash is unsuitable for small dogs and only available in red and black. Realistically, color means nothing to me.
Yeah.
You know? Well, maybe I shouldn't say that, because if you get a green one and you have it at the campsite,
you lose it.
Blends in with the trees. Or a red one that you drop on the ground and it blends in with all the pine needles.
Yeah.
Right? The old pine needle sort of thing. So if you take your pup on hikes, runs, or overland adventures, you'll love the convenience and durability of the Fido Pro Remy Runner Leash. So that's the second one. And then they did the best of the rest. There's the Tug 360-degree tangle-free retractable dog leash. And this is something like we've got.
I like the retractable ones.
Yeah. This is what we got. Price, $22. What? I think we actually paid more than that. Materials, nylon and plastic, everyday use, normal walks, easy to use locking mechanism. This is exactly what we have. Pros: smooth retraction, long total length, and easy lock-unlock features. Cons: ribbon mesh tends to twist as it re-enters the slot in the body of the leash. Smallish hand opening may not comfortably accommodate larger hands or gloved hands in the winter. Okay, I'll go with the gloved hands bit. Trying to stick a, if you got a big glove.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like a mitt.
Trying to operate it and have it in your hand.
But if you got like a glove with fingers, you can get that in there, no problems. I've never had an issue with the ribbon mesh being twisting as it gets back into the thing. I've never had that issue, so... the Tug 360-degree tangle-free retractable dog leash is a sleek, modern-looking alternative to traditional retractable leashes. And it looks just like the one we got. Utilizing flat tape instead of the more common rope, which is exactly what we've got, the flat tape. This leash is less prone to kinking and knotting and less likely to cause injuries such as rope burns.
Oh, yeah.
Leash has a one-button lock-unlock mechanism. Yeah, ours has two. One locks it, one unlocks it. And a guard at the mouth to prevent the tape from tangling as it re-enters the handle. Retraction is smooth and not fast enough to jerk the dog's collar. Available multiple sizes and colors. Length varies by size, ranging from 10 feet to 26 feet.
Whoa.
I think ours is... Is it 30 or 50 feet? Yeah, I think I can go pretty far ahead of me in that, so... Yeah, no, it's probably about 30 feet. Our tester used this leash with her medium size mixed breed and experienced some tangling and kinking when the leash was retracted from the fully extended position. She also noted that the handhold is small and may not comfortably accommodate large or gloved hands. Leash is heavier than other retractables, mainly because it needs to house a tape leash instead of a rope leash. It is not thick enough to withstand chewing, but a small extension comes with it to clip onto the end of the leash and protect it from overzealous chewers. If your pack is pretty mellow, we're looking at you, Dogs of Destruction chewer. The Tug 360-degree tangle-free retractable dog leash will work for you. So, yeah, this is what we have this sort of thing as our regular leash.
Yeah, back in the day with Beagles, we had the one of the corded ones. It was long, mm-hmm. but yeah, I laughed when they talked about the cord burns. I had forgotten about that because, you know, when the dogs would whip past you and you're wearing shorts, it's like, whoop,
yeah,
rope burn.
Yeah. No, and ours is, Athena will go like 30 feet in front of me or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then I'll keep on walking as she stops to smell something. Mm-hmm. And then I can walk for another 30 feet.
Yeah.
And then I just gives a little tug and then she comes ripping up. But it, as fast as she comes, like, trotting behind me,
mm-hmm.
it comes back into the big handle about the same speed. There is no, like, pulling sort of thing, right? The only time it pulls is when she all of a sudden gets to the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you can't go any farther. next one is the Herzog Silicone Dog Leash. $56. Silicone recycled ripstop. Best for rainy days, regular use, unique features, lovely design, and waterproof. Pros: waterproof silicone construction, ripstop joinery and handle, locking carabiner clasp. Cons: expensive, swivel connection feels flimsy, handle is stiff and uncomfortable to hold.
Huh.
So the only really good thing about this one, for rainy days or wet climbs, the Herzog silicone dog leash is top choice. It's waterproof silicone and quick drying ripstop construction won't even blink at the heaviest rain and splashiest puddles, and the color stays true forever. Locking carabiner clasp will keep your dog secure, and the heavy duty construction will not fray like webbing leashes. Design is where this leash really shines, though. Silicone is soft and flexible and doesn't stretch or become misshapen, and the recycled ripstop handle and clasp attachment are rugged enough to withstand pretty much any punishment your dog can put them through. Our tester found the ripstop on the leash handle to be too stiff and uncomfortable to hold. It softened some over time, but ultimately it was not easy to hold as a nylon handle, and some of the stitching at the seams began to fray after a month of constant heavy use. some concern about the swivel attaching to the carabiner on the leash. So yeah, the carabiner will really hold your dog on the, but the thing holding the carabiner to the leash, that's got a bit iffy.
Weak point.
So yeah, it's ideal for you and your canine companions if you enjoy laid back walks in the rain or live in a humid or wet place. Pacific Northwest, we see you.
There you go.
So yeah, if you need something for the rain, you're in a heavily rainy area, then that one's for you. And is this the last one? I can't even lick my fingers because it's Band-Aid. The Timberwolf Alpine 2 dog, two dog adjustable lead. I like this one. Price $50 to $69. Materials double braided rope. Best for walking two dogs at once. I know a lot of people that have two dogs that take on canoe trips.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
Yep.
Unique features, slide lock comfortable handle. Pros, slide lock coupler. Comfortable handle, multiple sizes. Cons, expensive. Yeah, you're getting to $50 to $70. You're starting to get up there in price. But again, for something like this, you're buying one leash instead of two, right?
Yes, exactly.
The Timberwolf Alpine 2-dog adjustable lead has everything you could want in a coupled leash. The braided rope offers a lot of security for even the biggest dogs, but smaller sizes are available for walking your little guys side by side. Handle is padded, quite comfy to hold, does not dig into your palm. It's available in multiple color sizes, but most unique features is a side lock. This gizmo allows owners to adjust the distance between the two dogs. One dog can be in front and the other of the other, or the mechanism can slide down to keep the dogs close to one another if the situation demands it, like on a crowded sidewalk. I know my dogs, and I don't know why I end up with dogs like this. They always want to be out front of everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So something like this, you know, if you got a dog that doesn't care and then you got my dog, this would be perfect. Leash is available in three diameters, 3/16, 5/16, and 7/16 inches. Two lengths, 4 and 6 feet. Again, the 6 feet really isn't.
Not long enough.
No.
Not for portaging or
no.
Round camp or hiking or.
Our tester appreciated the ability to allow her alpha to lead the way while still keeping the dogs close to one another. The swivel attachment also did a good job of preventing the dogs from getting tangled up together. Leash is quite expensive, but the heavy-duty hardware and unique features provide plenty of value. It shines while walking two dogs pretty much anywhere, though individual threads in the rope do catch and pull on thorny or rough undergrowth. But, I mean, if you're... So, if I got the canoe and I'm zipping down...
Yeah.
And Tracy's coming up behind me, she would have the dogs on the leash. So for 6 feet, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if you're looking for something that you can hold on to while portaging your canoe you know, even at points like if you got the big heavy pack on or something, 4 feet's definitely not going to be enough. 6 feet, I think, is would be the minimum you want is a 6 foot one.
Yeah. I found, now this is just me, but I tried when I had two beagles.
Mm-hmm.
So back in the day, what I ended up finding that worked really well for me was I just bought a cheap roll of that the yellow floaty nylon rope, the really cheap stuff.
Yep. You can get
a
Canadian.
And so I would just get a 20 plus foot chunk of it, and so I just stood on it. Like I tied a big knot ball in the end, so it's a nice good grip. Like I had about three of them at the end, and but then. When I'm walking with the dog, because beagles are beagles, right? So I would walk on the rope until I got to the dog. I'd step off. He'd take off running, and I could just step on the rope to stop him from getting too far away. But it kept the rope low to the ground, so it wasn't tripping anybody. You know, it was getting rope burns. And I had control by standing on it with my foot. And if I wanted the dog closer, I could call him back. And if he didn't come back, I just walked towards him on the rope. And so that was great for hiking and for portaging and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And the yellow rope floats, so if he's in the water and stuff like that, right?
Yeah. I mean, the big thing is when you're coming up to other people on the portage.
And that's the key thing.
And keeping them close, right?
Because for the most part, I would hike with them on local trails. And so it was always good to keep him under control because, again, beagle.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yeah, like on portages, if we were off somewhere where I knew there wouldn't be or most likely wouldn't be other people, I would probably like I still kept rope on him because if he gets a squirrel, he's going to be off in the woods.
And yeah.
Don't want to lose him. But, so yeah, it was, the rope was always good for the beagle, but, it just worked for me. So,
yeah.
But you know, one of these hip things, I think that it depends on the dog. Like it wouldn't work.
You
gotta
have some good recall on your dog to.
Yeah. And I mostly got the dog to fairly good recall. I could make him stop barking just by ordering him and stuff like that. But still, when he got a scent of a goose or an animal, and his brain turned off and he was just nose to the ground and didn't even know where he was going. Right.
I mean, we're looking at this from portaging aspect too. I mean, if you're hiking with one of these, I think these would all be fine.
Oh yeah. You're hiking, right? Cause
you don't have all that extra. I mean, if you're carrying like a 70-pound pack while you're just hiking along a trail or something like, unless you're doing like Adirondacks or something like that, but you know, you pretty much got your hands free.
Yep.
Unless you're using hiking poles, but even still. So, yeah, having that shorter one wouldn't be that big of an issue, right?
My concern would be if you had a canoe on your head.
Yeah.
Because you don't want the dog to tug, and like if you had it on the waist or in a hand and the dog saw a rabbit and ran after it, then it's going to throw you off balance and you're dropping your canoe or falling.
Well, my thing is more along lines of, like I say, when you're sitting there and you put your foot on the edge of a rock and then you got to make that hop up to the next step. Well, your dog's already at the top.
Yeah.
Right? And if it's too close and they're hopping to the next stop to get to the top, they're pulling you off balance. Yeah. And at that point, you know, you're talking about maybe hurting yourself. So, I think we'll take a couple looks at these ones here and we'll definitely get one of those longer waist ones for our portaging. Start training Athena with that one. The Friends of the Detroit River, the Huron-Clinton Metro Parks, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and Wilderness Inquiry Canoe-mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Partnered up to create an educational day of adventure, partly aboard a canoe at Lake Erie Metro Park in Brownstown Township. The idea to teach grade school children about the Detroit River and Great Lakes from the outdoors instead of a typical four-walled classroom. In the field experience, as opposed to sitting in your desk and half falling asleep. It's getting kids outdoors and getting them new experiences that they might not have ever had, like canoeing, and driving home the messages of being good stewards to our lands, whether it's through not littering, being kind to the wildlife, or how to incorporate ourselves out there, says Mackenzie Wallachsek.
And these are big messages that need to be taught.
Yes. Stewardship Director of Friends of Detroit River, but it's really exciting to see how much fun they have out there. And if they're having fun, then that's sort of, wow, this is pretty cool. Got to do this again.
You're learning by accident.
Yeah. Organizations were joined recently by dozens of eager young girls from the Girl Scouts of Southeast Michigan's Girl Empowerment Program. Split into two groups, the girls went through training provided by the Wilderness Inquiry Canoe-mobile before boarding their floating classroom. First, the easy zip and clip method of securing a life jacket, followed by a quick lesson on how to paddle a canoe and how not to paddle a canoe. girls wiggled into the life jackets, which sported animal nicknames on the back like Blue Iguana, River Minnow, Cuban Crocodile, and names of many other finned and furred creatures, and practiced rowing their oars along their canoes, alongside their canoes from the bank of the Detroit River, finally walking up the loading docks and boarding three 10-person canoes. Wow. So this is like the one we see at the Canoe Museum, right? Yeah. Each canoe-mobile captain pushed away from the dock, and the girls began rowing up the Detroit River on the lookout for wild creatures.
Now, they keep saying rowing, I noticed in this article. I assume they mean paddling.
Yes. It's like an interpretive paddle. If an eagle passes by, or a blue heron, or a great egret, they'll talk about that. They've seen an eagle so far and a fox snake, and they were so excited about them. Over on land, the other half of the group participate in activities led by three other organizations. A quick hike on Lake Erie Metro Park Trail led by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Rangers. Musical chairs-inspired game led by Friends of the Detroit River to simulate how invasive species negatively impact ecological relationships. And a hands-on lesson from Huron-Clinton Metro Parks about marshland animals, complete with pelts and furs.
Sounds like a good program.
Right?
That sounds pretty amazing.
Even though some of the lessons may seem difficult for the younger kids to understand, teaching them in such an interactive way usually allows children to get a good grasp of the concepts. Yeah, I mean, just sitting in a classroom trying to tell them about it really doesn't...
Yeah, you're going to get distracted. Yeah. But if you're enveloped, immersed in it,
yeah,
and it's fun, then you're going to learn incidentally. It's part of the fun, yeah, learning.
Within each organization's expertise, their subject matter always comes back to the kids' time spent on the water. For example, when the first canoeing group returned to land and attentively watched as Kevin Arnold from Huron-Clinton Metro Parks held up different marshland animals, one girl pointed to the red-winged blackbird and remarked that she'd spotted one while out on the river. So they're recognizing this stuff, yes, right? As if the adventure couldn't get any better, their canoe trip earned the Girl Scouts a paddling mini patch, one of 28 outdoors skill mini patches specific to the Girl Scouts of Southeastern Michigan.
Right on.
Right? That brings them into nature and learn skills and live experiences that will stick with them throughout the remainder of their Girl Scout careers. And if they're keep into that as they get older, then it probably some of this stuff will stick with them for life.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully this is a memory that lives on and sparks a new hobby or passion that they might not have known they were interested in, and to get them outside and enjoy nature, says Paige Wigren, lead outdoor education program specialist of the Girl Scouts of Southeastern Michigan. So that's pretty cool that they get to get out there and actually paddle canoes and see all the animals firsthand. And
it is.
That sort of deal. So the canoe-mobile, let's talk about that for a second.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Canoe-mobile is a floating classroom that brings students out on local waterways in 10-person canoes to learn about the science, history, geography, and culture. The on-water experiences are often enriched with land-based learning activities developed and facilitated by organizations such as the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, National Park Service, and hundreds of other government and nonprofits. Canoe-mobile brings classroom learning outside, engaging youth to improve school performance, cultivate a stewardship ethic, and create pathways to pursue educational and career opportunities in the outdoors. Canoe-mobile travels around the country, and this is in the United States. Canoe-mobile travels around the country so that a diverse array of students have the chance to experience the nation's best outdoor field trip. In addition, Canoe-mobile offers free and open to the public paddles in communities where it is working. Figure if they're going to a school or some organization to do the thing, they may as well put on more things in that area.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Get more people out. These experiences change waterways into places of recreation, learning, and community building. From San Francisco to the Bronx, communities welcome Canoe-mobile to serve more than 30,000 youth and adults of all backgrounds and abilities each year.
That's a big number.
That's a lot of 10 people canoe rides. Mm-hmm. So you can go to wildernessinquiry.org, and at the top there's the Programs and Impact tab. If you click on that, you'll find Canoe-mobile under that. And if you click that, on the Canoe-mobile website, you will find a lot more information about what it all is. I mean, we could spend all day here talking about it. There's also more information on map and schedule, so when and where they're going to be. So that way, if there's going to be in your area, you can check out if they're going to have any, you know, public paddle sort of deal and go out and check them out.
Do they describe where exactly this is? Like, is this program...
All through the states.
It's all through the states? It's not just California?
No. All across the states. The activity and fees, the Canoe-mobile stories, like people that have been on it and what they say, and Canoe-mobile's impact, what impact they're having on people and stuff like that. So, yeah, go to wildernessinquiry.org and check out Canoe-mobile. It's pretty cool sounding.
It is. That's a neat program.
And the fact that it's good for, you know, you can get the kids out there that early and teach them, number one, paddling, and then about the ecology and environment around them on the water's edge and stuff. Perfect. Now,
have we heard about that before?
I don't think I've heard about the canoe-mobile before.
It constantly amazes me that as long as we've been doing this, we're still learning new things.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Or maybe we've just forgot about it. There's so many things that we're always saying, oh, this is so cool that this exists.
Oh, that was episode 233.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I don't think we've talked about canoe-mobile before.
Because, well, we it's may not have cool, talked though. About it, but I'm wondering if... Because I'm trying to remember the conversations we had when we discussed things with Chicago Adventure Therapy's Kat. Yeah. So she talked about a lot of things, and I keep trying to recollect the conversations we had with
her. Yeah, Andrea's not had I don't think anything this about canoe-mobile.
Yeah, I don't think it ever came up.
No, because they do their own thing.
They have a special, their own individual program. They're not, this one here is all over the U.S., so it's all kinds of different outlets, right?
Yeah.
Like a Tim Hortons or something.
That's pretty cool, though.
Mm-hmm. It's awesome. And things like that, like when they can work with Girl Scouts and so on, it diversifies knowledge, gets people more comfortable in the outdoors and gives you a love and sense of the outdoors, which is important because they're going to be the future ambassadors of the outdoors. They're going to be the ones we want to protect the outdoors for future generations beyond.
Yeah, and that's what they say is like you got to get them interested in being stewards of the land and the rivers, right? So it seems to be a recurring theme this year. We talked there... I don't think last week, the week before, about how many capsizes.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And deaths.
There was a lot.
Somebody was actually tallying them up, saying, "Oh my God, that's like the 12th one, 13th one, or something." Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, they're tallying up, like two people here, a couple people there, one person here, one.
And this seems to be a bigger year than like.
Then so far it's been
It always happens. It's going to happen here, there, and everywhere.
But this just seems to be like every week. There's a couple of different stories,
and in some cases, it's not always people new to the sport. It's sometimes the
Oren Bren, the whitewater kayaker guy,
exactly
29.
Yeah, young guy. He was doing some whitewater. He does rafting and mostly.
Oh, he's a kayaking. Big name in the whitewater.
Big in the industry.
Yeah,
and so
paddling in Switzerland and got flipped and tugged underwater. They found his body.
Yeah,
They found it there this week and you never know.
It happens. You never know.
It happens, right?
And that's the nature of the sport. You have to accept anything you do. There's risks involved. And the best thing you can do is become prepared and educated for whatever you are going to do.
Yeah. So they talked, there's this one here about a kayak rescue after being capsized in, I just have questions. I'm not going to assume anything. I'm going to make some comments, but, after being capsized in this kayak, Alberto Donskoy desperately called his friend for help, triggering a Netflix-worthy rescue operation that took place while shark circled the stranded fisherman. So this guy, 63, from Givat Olga, a local community in northern Israel, is a dedicated sailor, an experienced fisherman, who set out on a routine kayaking trip from Sadat Yam towards Givat Olga and back. But shortly into his return journey, the sea turned treacherous. Around 10:30, I gotta think it's a.m. It wouldn't be nighttime.
I'm thinking so, yeah.
As he paddled opposite the Hedera power plant, a towering 10-foot wave capsized his motorized kayak.
That's a big wave.
Thrown violently into the water, Donskoy found himself about 16 feet from his overturned kayak. Fighting the powerful currents, he swam back with all his might, fully aware that without the kayak, survival was unlikely. Reaching it, he managed to briefly activate his waterlogged mobile phone. That's my first thing.
Yeah.
If you are, especially if you're solo,
mm-hmm.
would you not have your phone in a waterproof container?
I was
like, mine's in a Ziploc bag. Right?
I was watching a kayak fisherman YouTube video there the other day and caught himself a nice fish. Anyways, he has his phone on a bungee leash in a waterproof
around his neck?
No, it's attached to his boat. So it's attached, attached to his kayak. And so at one point when he latched onto the fish, he just let go of his phone and it dropped over the side.
Oh, okay.
But it's on a leash. It's in a waterproof bag. He says, and at the end of the video says, this is why I carry my phone this way, because it's like something I got fish on. I got to go get that fish.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just let go of his phone and it bounced off the side of the kayak into the water, but it was on a leash.
Yeah.
In a waterproof sack.
But you should have your phone.
You should.
I mean, it's a safety device.
That's a minimum
at that point,
waterproof.
Right.
And it should be attached to you somehow.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a waterlogged mobile phone, urgently calling his friend. I am in a major jam. I am going to die. I am opposite the Hedera power plant.
And I'm putting this whole rescue on you, my friend.
Right?
I'm not going to call the authorities.
I'm sorry, the number you've called is not in service. Before the device succumbed to salty water and shut down. Yeah, why you wouldn't call
emergency services.
So grasping the severity of the situation, his friend contacted a connection at the Israeli ports and shipping authority. The call quickly made its way to Ronan Abramov, director of organization and administration at the authority, who immediately alerted the on-duty pilot at Hedera Port, Eyal El-Gabali. Hedera Port primarily serving the Israel Electric Corporation for coal unloading, is under the management of the shipping authority. El-Gabali swiftly mobilized the emergency team, set out in the pilot boat, navigating the hostile seas towards the last known location of the distress call. After nearly an hour of relentless searching in dire conditions, they finally spotted the kayak floating about 1,640 feet from the coal pier. And this is the other thing, is how fast did this storm come in? Did he not check the weather first?
Yeah.
That's the other question. It doesn't get into that. So these are just questions I have. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, why wasn't your phone in a waterproof container?
Yeah.
Did you check the weather first? And these are just things that go through my brain. You know, if I'm going to go on a trip, like especially solo, on a long,
yeah,
and especially if you're on the sea sort of thing. For hours that felt like an eternity, Donskoy clung to his overturned kayak, battling waves that threatened to hurl him against the breakwater rocks. Waves were catastrophic. I swallowed a lot of water. I was staring death in the eye, he later recounted. Stranded in the stormy waters for about 5 hours, Donskoy was helpless and surrounded by menacing jellyfish. At one point, a shark circled him before swimming away. Talk about staring death in the eye. Ship's crew executed a careful and precise rescue operation, retrieving Donskoy and his kayak and providing immediate medical assistance.
Hmm.
And this is what these guys trained for, too, yep, right?
Exactly.
Donskoy expressed profound gratitude to his rescuers. When I saw your ship, I said, God loves me, he shared. Critical phone call he managed to make before his phone died. His friend's swift action to contact the shipping authority. The urgent coordination from the authority's director and the unwavering determination of port pilot, who braved the stormy seas without pause, were all crucial to this rescue. Shipping authority emphasized that without Donskoy's desperate call, he might have been lost to the sea. Again, it says that his friend contacted a connection. So it sounds like a personal connection to Israel ports. Is that not how you read that? Grasping the severity of the situation, his friend contacted a connection at Israel ports and shipping authority.
It might be a translation error.
Maybe. The following day, Alberto went to the synagogue to offer prayer of gratitude. Will I go back to sailing? I'm traumatized now. When you're alone at sea for hours, you see death. You're scared. When I saw the shark, I thought to myself, that's all I need now. Time passed slowly, but they saved me from death. God apparently loves me. So, like I say, my points would be, why was your phone not in a waterproof
container? Well, that's a key thing.
Did you do the weather watch? And if that is not a translation thing, if his buddy didn't have that connection.
His buddy reached out to another buddy. And
yeah. That, to me, that's how I could be reading it wrong. I don't know. Like I say, this is just, they don't really get into it. But that's like me calling you and you saying, oh, I'm going to call my buddy at the Marine police.
Well, and see, the thing is, if you call emergency services, they can triangulate your phone and it's easier to find you. So he was unable to specifically direct them to himself. And so it was just through word description. He's by this power plant, yada, mm-hmm. yada, yada. So this is where you're going to have to go look for him. So if he had called 911 himself, and I found this out too. So 911 is US.
Yeah.
In Israel, it's 110 on mobile devices. But if you're in Israel and you dial 911, it automatically directs you to 110. So they figured it out. They know. It's like, well, most people watch, North American
movies. I wouldn't be calling you if that was me.
No, I know. I would.
I'm calling 911. Say I need the Marine Police to come and get me now.
Exactly.
Or search because and rescue or whatever.
They can see what towers you pinged off of. Yeah. Right.
My phone's about to die. I'm off Hedera power plant.
Gone. And right. They go, okay, what towers did he ping off of and whatever, right?
And they know right off the bat, mm-hmm. as opposed to how much time was lost while his buddy trying to get a hold of somebody.
Yeah, had to get a hold of somebody and had to say he's at this location. Yeah,
cut out that middleman.
Yeah.
So, but like I say, my two big points from all this is, why was this phone not in a waterproof case? Like I say, when I go, it's always in a waterproof case because in case something happens.
Yeah.
And especially if you're solo all the time out there, why would you not take those extra precautions?
Steps. You're alone. You're solo. Yeah. You have only yourself you can rely on.
Yeah, and the weather watch thing, it doesn't get into it, but when you're all of a sudden talking about 10-foot waves.
Yeah, if I'm going fishing for the day.
Does that really just pop up like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, did he? What?
Yeah.
Weather very rarely just shows up. It does. It does do that, but generally, if you're going out somewhere and it's like, oh, it's drizzly and there's some wind, I better check the weather.
Right.
So maybe he left at like 6 a.m. And it was dead calm at 6 a.m. By the time he's out in the water, it's like, oh, where's
wind
this wind
picking
coming
up?
From?
And So, but at least everything worked out well and everything, you know, everybody put all the practicing into effect and everything worked out well and, see if he goes back out in the water or not. That's the last I got.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I got this week. You notice our shows have gone from like 52 minutes to like an hour 10, hour
we
15.
We average, I think I don't know, you'd know better than me, but I do watch the time and it's like, oh, we're at 110 or 109 or 112 or whatever.
Yeah.
Unless we're on with Kevin and then it's like 4 hours.
Then it's 4 hours. Him and Andy. This week, 9 hours with Kevin Callan. That'll be awesome.
He's a good storyteller.
Yeah. He's up at Sioux College right now.
Oh, is he?
Giving the commencement speech.
He's doing that?
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yep. They called him back. Well, he graduated from there years ago, right? Yeah. And he actually had to put a picture on social media there, him and his old Sioux College jacket. I think I still have my Centennial College jacket up in the closet.
I didn't buy a jacket.
I did. And mine's got a melted, you know, the little elastic part at the bottom?
Yep.
It's melted because I hung it off my motorcycle handlebars and it touched the exhaust pipe. Yeah. Yeah, it melted. What's that smell? My jacket! I don't know. It probably still fits me. I still got that slim physique.
yes, that is you.
Donuts, what? What's this running thing you talk about? Never heard of it. Only thing I run from anymore is squirrels. Alrighty, well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to our episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.